Okay, thanks. So I would like to present the work which was performed together with Bolkovsky, who is now postdoc in Princeton, and Fuchson, who is postgraduate student in Weizmann Institute. So first of all, I would like to remind you some general properties of polymers, which are embedded into turbulent flows. As it is well known, if we place a polymer molecule into a fluid, then it will be coiled into a ball, something like this. And the size of this ball can be estimated, or not, SL, which is the length of the chain of polymers, times square root of n. This is very simple estimate, which can be found from, for example, random walk reasoning. Okay, and so if the concentration of polymer molecules in a solution is small, then actually properties of this solution do not differ essentially from Newtonian liquid. But nevertheless, it is well known that even a low concentration of polymer molecules could influence essentially hydrodynamical properties of fluids, and this fact is related to that fact that these molecules could be stretched essentially in a non-homogeneous flow. And in this case, this ball is deformed into a structure which can be roughly seen as an ellipsoid, and axis of this ellipsoid could differ very significantly. So if n is the number of chains in the polymer molecules, then we can say that these molecules can be elongated up to the size which is practically n times l, where n is the number of monomers and of chains, and therefore this is actually the total length of the molecule. So in this state, molecule produce an essential back reaction into the flow. Okay, this is the main idea. And now, further, I would like to consider this situation quantitatively, and actually we start from the ideas which were developed mainly by Lumley, and so some starting equations belong to him, really. First of all, what is the main object which should be considered? And the main object which we will consider is actually the polymer contribution to the stress tensor, which we will designate as PIK. So, it is actually the source of the back reaction of the polymer molecules into the flow. So, we will consider the situation where this stress tensor lies in intermediate region between P naught, which is the contribution which is associated with molecules which are coiled into balls, and some P maximum, which is the contribution associated with very strong strong elongated molecules. And in this intermediate region, it is possible to formulate very simple equation for this stress tensor, and I will write this equation. It is the full derivative, and maybe I will write it into for matrix. Transposed minus 2 over P. And let me introduce sigma k is the derivative of the velocity. This is the strain tensor. And also, what is the meaning of different terms in this equation? This is simple advection of the molecules due to the flow, d over dt is as usual equal v grad. And these two terms describe actually something like rotation of molecules due to the presence of the strain, rotation and also elongation. And this term describes relaxation of molecules to their equilibrium position. No more. Okay.
The way I know these equations is normally that if you go to the limit of the time going to zero, meaning very fast relaxation, you recover the Newtonian case.
No.
In this case, you do not.
No.
If you think of the Maxwell model,
when torque goes to zero, to be more precise, if torque is very small, then actually only small deviations from the equilibrium are possible. And in this case, you should introduce into this equation something like this: a relaxation to the equilibrium shape. So, and then...
this is fine, okay? So you now say that there's sort of some equilibrium of zero,
Yes.
Yeah, not stretched, and that would be the Newtonian limit, and then you converge.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And did the last say that this pi naught is something eta times sigma?
No. Pi naught is actually a very small contribution, and if a solution is dilute, then of course it cannot be comparable with viscosity. But if molecules are stretched essentially, then their contribution to the stress tensor could be compared to the viscous contribution, and I will discuss this later. Okay, so let me first omit this term and consider this equation. Okay, and let me give a very simple example. Suppose that the strain matrix is something like this: 0, 0, A1, A2, and if we consider an incompressible flow, then of course A plus A1 plus A2 should be equal to 0, and suppose that A is the largest eigenvalue of this matrix. Then it is more or less obvious what will happen. Then actually the largest component of this stress tensor will be PXX, and the equation for this component will be like this one: d over dt PXX is equal to 2A 1 minus 2 PXX. And we see that if A is smaller than 1 over 2, then any initial value of P will relax, and if A will be larger than 1 over 2, then this value will increase in time, and this instability actually describes the main mechanism which could produce the strong elongation of molecules, the strong increase of the stress tensor associated with polymer molecules.
There's no need to put an external noise. All this is a finite temperature, how important? Or?
No. Actually, the temperature noise, of course, is inessential in this situation.
Because what? I mean, people estimate it and it is much less than what is generated.
Yes, of course, and really, what the thermal noise produces is the equilibrium value P naught. Since due to the thermal noise, you can estimate the shape of the molecule in equilibrium, and then you can estimate what is the contribution to the stress tensor associated with this equilibrium state. And for these estimates, of course, you are right, thermal noise is essential. But I am going to consider large elongations, and for this problem, of course, the thermal noise is irrelevant, absolutely. Okay, so this is the main idea, which actually belongs to Lamley, and now I am going to consider the situation when molecules are placed into the external turbulent flow, and in this case this matrix sigma, which is the strain matrix, is a random function of time, and so I am going to consider what will happen in this case. And first I will disregard the back reaction, and in this case I could think that the only influence of the flow is in a sigma, and I will accept a statistics of the sigma, and then let us examine what will happen with the statistics of the tensor P.
Yeah, of course. This equation is the A minus 1 over tau, which if the stress becomes too strong, of course, diverges in time. Don't you have to put then some, or consider some nonlinear terms in pi?
No.
Of the explosion?
No. I will explain why, and in principle, I will explain all these things later. Let us start from this very simple equation, and then I will... of course, nonlinearity will impose some restrictions on our consideration, and I will note these restrictions. Okay, so since I am interested in large deviations from equilibrium, then one expects that eigenvalues of this tensor P are strongly different in this case, and I will be interested actually in the main eigenvalue of P. And if I am interested, then I can write actually the following expression: P naught exponent rho and I and k, where n is the unit vector. That is precisely only the main component of the principal component of this matrix. Then, if to substitute this ansatz into this equation, it is possible to find immediately equations. Let me write these equations. Again, I expect that for large deviations from equilibrium, eigenvalues of the tensor P are strongly different, and I am interested only in the principal eigenvalue. And in this case, it is possible to take only this contribution to the stress tensor. Okay, so substituting this ansatz into this equation, I can immediately write these equations, and you see that the dynamics of the unit vector n is determined solely by the matrix sigma, by the strain matrix sigma, and is not related actually to the value of the to the eigenvalue of the stress tensor P. That means that sigma possesses a complicated statistics, which is related to the statistics of the advecting velocity, but actually this statistics is independent of rho. And this is the key fact which allows us to say a lot about the statistics of rho. Okay, so let me first note the following. Let me first note that the average value of zeta is the Lyapunov exponent characteristic for flow. That is, it is the average logarithmic rate of diverging Lagrangian trajectories in the flow. Let me demonstrate it. It is very simple. Suppose that we consider two flows Lagrangian trajectories, which are characterized by the separation delta x, and then the equation for this delta x is written like this one. y. And therefore it can be written as. Next, I could write that delta x I is an absolute value times n I, and then I will find from this equation the same equation for the unit vector n, which is written here, and the equation for the log of delta x is exactly zeta. So we see that the average value of zeta determines the logarithmic rate of divergent Lagrangian trajectories in the hole, and therefore this is the Lyapunov exponent. Okay, so we see that actually this field zeta is closely related to the Lagrangian dynamics in the flow. Okay, so
I'm not too happy with that.
Why?
Because when you calculate Lyapunov exponents, in a sense, the way the zeta appears is as the local strain rate projected onto these ends.
Yeah.
Now, if you take some low-dimensional system and mm-hmm. you calculate the local derivatives at every point in phase space,
mm-hmm.
you can extract eigenvalues from that.
Yeah.
These eigenvalues do not agree with the Lyapunov exponent you calculate along the trajectory.
What do you mean? Do you mean 2D?
No, I mean, the question is the following. If you take some dynamical system and you calculate at every point, say, instead of ordinary differential equations, you calculate at every point the local derivative matrix, the local Jacobian,
mm-hmm.
you get the eigenvalues from that.
Yes.
These eigenvalues are not the ones that you find when you run a trajectory and calculate the Lyapunov exponent along the trajectory.
Well, that's a question of definition. Of course, you should average over all trajectories. So
the difference I'm making is between sort of calculating a Lyapunov exponent along the trajectory and calculating eigenvalues from a local Jacobian. They're not the same.
Yes, 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 you are absolutely right. But of course, maybe I should be more precise. Since here I've written an average, what does this average mean? This is average not, of course, only along a single trajectory, but average over space also. And this is, in some sense, a definition. This Lyapunov exponent is a measure of diverging Lagrangian trajectories in average. So I should, of course, average here over space. But in principle, you are right that, of course, if you consider, for example, two-dimensional flows, you can imagine that there are closed trajectories, and in this case, Lyapunov exponent could be identically equal to zero in the vicinity of these trajectories, and so further. I agree. But this is not a characteristic of an individual trajectory, but a characteristic of trajectories in a statistical sense. Okay. So, let me run further. So let me return to this equation, and of course it is it can be immediately solved in that sense that I can write st over tau plus zeta, where plus z, which is the integral of zeta. And we see that this integral is an integral over of a random variable, and therefore it possesses a well-known statistical properties. Maybe I will remind you these properties. And actually, I could write the probability distribution function for this variable z on times which are much larger than the correlation time of this processor zeta, which can be written something like this. Dz is equal to where S can be called entropy function. And if I am interested in more probable events, then I can write that S is something like this. S of x is x squared over 2 delta. So I can, I will plot S as a function of x. It looks like this one. By definition, it is 0 for x equal to 0. And it has minimum at x equal to 0. And this is actually positive and convex function. And the most probable events are determined by the vicinity of this minimum. And in this case, it is possible to expand this entropy into the series. And the main term of this expansion is quadratic. And if to substitute this expression into this exponent, then we will immediately find the central limit theorem, of course. But really, I will be interested in large deviations from these most probable events. And in this case, I should substitute this quadratic form by a function which is not known explicitly and depends really on the concrete statistics of the flow. But nevertheless, only very general properties of this function will be needed for me, and really only that fact that this function is convex. Okay. The next point is that.
So the name entropy is just a formula, or is it? How is this entropy related to what we commonly call entropy?
No relation. Yes. Okay. Okay, and now suppose that rho has the value rho naught when t equal to 0, then rho at the time t is determined by this equation, and this function actually determines the probability to have this value. Therefore, we can write the following integral equation for the probability distribution function of rho. P of t of rho is a convolution, 0 naught, g t over 2. I've substituted this expression, the expression for that from this relation. P naught rho naught. That's all. So now let us look for a stationary solution of this integral equation. And in this case, the probability distribution function P does not depend on T. And then its form can be easily established. For example, let us perform the Laplace transform. Then we will see that actually a single Laplace component can be non-zero. And therefore, the stationary solution has the following form, alpha rho. And to find this alpha, I should substitute this stationary solution here. And after that, I will immediately find the relation like this one. Only for tail, of course. Of course, actually, this is a consequence of the linear character of this equation. And of course, in places where this property is violated, this tail will be also, will have another form. Okay. So, I would like to remind you that this expression was obtained in the limit when the time t is much larger than the calibration time of the flow, and therefore t is a large parameter, and therefore this integral can be calculated in the settle point approximation. And after that it is done, one immediately finds conditions which determine this exponent alpha. The conditions are is equal to zero. These are conditions. So these conditions enables one to find an alpha and beta, where are parameters, if we know the explicit form of the function S. Okay, so let us return to the initial problem. Since we examine actually the probability distribution function for all, which is something which is log of the main value of the tensor P. And so that means that in terms of P, we come to a power law. So the probability distribution function of P can be written like this one. P minus alpha over 2 minus 1. And this is power tail, which is actually very soft, and that means actually that, for example, let me return to this point further later. Okay, so now let us think about the normalization condition for P. Since actually, of course, the probability distribution function should be normalized. The integral over rho of this probability distribution function should be equal to zero. And if alpha is positive, then this integral converges at large rho, and that means actually that the majority of molecules have nearly equilibrium form, since this integral is determined by small rho, which corresponds to weakly stretched molecules. If alpha is smaller than zero, then this integral starts to diverge at large rho, and in this case I should think about mechanism which will violate this equation, of course. And to your question, I should introduce here, for example, nonlinear terms, but really, as I will argue, for interesting cases, this condition will be violated even earlier. Okay. So, we see that actually alpha, is, which is equal to zero, is in some sense the boundary value, which can be interpreted as the point where something like coil stretch transition occurs, which was discussed in the literature already. And it appears that in the vicinity of this critical value, we can solve this equation practically explicitly, since in this case, this Gaussian approximation works well. And after that, we find that in the vicinity of alpha equal to zero, alpha is equal to 2 over delta, 1 over tau minus lambda. And again, I would like to remind you that lambda is the Lyapunov exponent for this flow, and delta is actually the variance of the field zeta, which can be written like this one. Integral over t so both these parameters are expressed in terms of statistical properties of the flow. Okay, now let us let us consider, for example, something like P squared average, the second moment of the stress tensor. And in accordance with this definition, it can be written like dP over P, P squared minus alpha over 2. And we see that this moment starts to diverge when alpha is equal to 4. So before this coil stretch transition. And the question is, what will determine this the value of the second moment for alpha which are less than 4? And to establish this, I should introduce also the dynamic equation for the velocity itself, which is Navier-Stokes equation, which should be supplemented by the term with the stress tensor. Let me write this equation. It is mass density. It is not the same as was written previously. D over dt I is equal to I plus eta. These are usual terms. I should also add here the term with the stress tensor associated with the polymer molecules, and also external force which drives turbulence. Okay, so let me remind you that the main assumption which was made at deriving this power tail was that the statistics of sigma, or the statistics of the flow, is independent of the statistics of the polymers. And let us check this condition. And it is possible, if it is correct, if it is possible to neglect this term in comparison with the viscous term. But if the value of the stress tensor is large enough, then of course it will be not the case. And it is very simple to write an estimate when this back reaction of the polymers to the flow will be essential. So it can be written like eta times sigma, and this is found from the comparison of these two terms. And if I am interested in alpha of order unity, then really sigma is of order of 1 over 2, and therefore I can find something like this. So if now to plot the probability distribution for the stress tensor, then we will find something like this. Here is P naught. I believe alpha is positive. This is P naught. This is the and there is a bump here. Then there is this tail, E to the minus 1 to the minus alpha 2. And so I should introduce here P back, and after that the probability distribution function decreases rapidly, since starting from these values of P, the back reaction is switched on, and really this back reaction will suppress fluctuations of the velocity, and therefore will suppress sigma, and therefore it will suppress the mechanism which produces this long tail. Okay, this is the situation for positive alpha, and I should also write here something like P maximum. This is the value which corresponds to strongly elongated molecules where nonlinear effects are will be essential, and this equation will be violated. Really, there is a competition between these two values, of course. I would like to know that P maximum is, of course, proportional to the concentration of polymer molecules, and therefore, at varying, whereas this estimation doesn't know anything about concentration. Therefore, for very dilute solutions, the situation will be opposite. P maximum will be something here, and will determine the real cutoff of our consideration. But this situation is in some sense not very interesting, since in this case the back reaction of polymers to the flow is negligible, and really we deal with Newtonian liquid. So further, I will believe that the concentration of molecules is large enough, so P maximum is larger than P back. Yeah? And the pressure is actually not a dynamical variable, since it is related to the velocity itself. And next, the problem is that I am interested in the resistance. I am interested in the energy dissipation, which is related with these two. And in this left-hand side, there, I write the terms which do not dissipate energy. And so this back reaction is related to an additional dissipation which is associated with polymer molecules. And this is the reason why I should compare these two terms, since the viscosity term also produces a dissipation of energy.
Sorry? Are you implicitly working at low Reynolds numbers?
No.
No, you just no. The molecules are short, the molecules are in the disposition.
Yes, yes, yes.
Even that stage.
Ah, yes, yes, yes. Of course, molecules are very small.
There is a huge initial interval.
Oh, yeah, of course.
How do molecules shift by maximum?
Max is the value at which nonlinear terms appear to be relevant in this equation. This is the contribution which is associated with strongly elongated molecules when they are practically filaments.
But then this question of whether pi max is much or smaller than pi back would not only depend on the concentration but also on the length of the polymers, wouldn't it?
No.
I mean, if you take something which is
no, yes, in some sense, yes, in some sense you are right. Of course, this value depends not only on concentration but also on the number n, yes, on the degree of polymerization. Yes, you're absolutely right in this sense, yeah.
And on the qualitative level, there are estimates sort of as to how things scale with the number of monomers and the concentration. Did you compare with sort of any of the data that exists in drug production, or?
Mm.
I mean, it sounds like you have specific predictions as to how, in particular, the possibility of an onset of an influence of the polymers on the flow should depend on the concentration, at least scale with the concentration and scale with the length of the polymer.
Mm-hmm.
And my question is, did you compare that with
Mm-hmm. things that have been published? And really, I didn't think about this question, but I believe that P maximum should be roughly proportional to N and concentration of molecules. But this question, as I remember, was discussed in the literature. Maybe we will discuss this point later.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm not an expert here, but does your model, would it also make predictions of whether this will be shear thinning or shear thickening? You know what those terms mean? The effective viscosity increases with shear rate.
Yes, of course, of course, of course. Of course, of course, of course. I will discuss this point in a minute. Okay. So, okay. So let us think what will happen if alpha is negative. This is the condition that the majority of molecules are stretched. Then then I assert that the probability distribution function will be absolutely different. It will have a sharp maximum near a quantity which I will call P optimum, which lies between P back and P max. And let me argue this property. And for this, let me first note that in this case the viscose length is shifted in comparison with the viscose length which is associated with the bare viscosity. Actually it is larger, and that is associated with that fact that just this term will produce energy dissipation in this situation, and the dissipation length should be found by comparison this term and this one. Okay, next. It is possible to find what is the characteristic value of the stress tensor sigma on this mu viscose scale. And for this, let me rewrite this equation like this one. D over dt log P is equal to, let me write just P times Pk. Let me extract the absolute value of the tensor and the unit tensor, which is determined like this was one, that the trace of P times P transposed is equal to unity. And in this case, it is possible to find the equation like this one. Over tau. This is an exact consequence of this equation, and if we are in the stationary case, it is possible to find averages, and the average of the left hand side disappears. After that, we find a relation average is equal to 2 over tau, and that means that the characteristic value of sigma on this mu viscose scale is of the order of 1 over 2. This is the first relation. And let now consider the next relation. Let us combine these two equations. Then it is possible to find a condition which is a balance of the energy dissipation, which is the sum of these two terms, and the energy input. This is always the energy input. This is the dissipation which is associated with the viscosity, and this is an additional dissipation which is associated with the presence of the polymer molecules. Because this term is dissipative, obviously. Suppose that we forget about this stretching. Then this equation is purely a relaxational equation. And that means that the energy, the elastic energy associated with polymer molecules will decrease with time. No more. Very simple. So, let me now average this equation. Average this equation. Average, and therefore we will see in the right hand side the energy input per unit volume. Now I know that this term can be estimated as eta over tau squared, and therefore this term doesn't increase with increasing input energy, and therefore the main term in the left hand side is this one, and therefore I could write an estimate that P of the optimal value of P is something like 2 FP. So we see that this value increase with increasing the input into the system from P back to P maximum, and after that it reaches P maximum, really the applicability conditions of our theory are broken, and therefore in this case I should introduce something like nonlinear terms into this equation, and I will not discuss this point further, since really that means that when I will increase the input energy further, then actually the back reaction will decrease effectively, since P cannot be larger than P maximum. Okay, so now 2 words about correlation function of the stress density. Let me consider for definition the situation when alpha is positive, and that means actually that all molecules are near the equilibrium form, and in this case it is possible to find not only moments but also correlation functions of P, and let me shortly expose how it is possible to do. Again, we start from the equation. Let me write it.
Yeah. Did I understand this correctly, that you're suggesting as you increase the volume in the fluid, you are inputting more and more energy?
Yes.
Then at a certain point, the energy dissipation has to shift from the dissipation of the Newtonian solvent to being totally dissipated in the polymers?
Yes, exactly. Moreover, maybe I will plot the picture, for one picture. Let me plot effective viscosity, which is by definition something like P divided by sigma. Let me introduce this effective viscosity, and let me plot this effective viscosity as a function of epsilon, and of course the level here, the natural level here, is the viscosity of the solvent, and therefore it will increase up to the point corresponding to alpha equal to zero, and starting from this point the majority of molecules will be staged. After that the effective viscosity will increase, it will appear a maximum at the point where P O is from a negligible value. Okay, let me write here.
What,
yes, yes, it is only the polymer contribution. So when the optimal value of P will reach P maximum, then this effective viscosity will also have maximum, and then it will decrease, something like this. This is the picture which we propose.
Why is there a reduction
of
drug reduction?
Okay, you can think about velocity or Reynolds number, something like this. Since E is the energy, the input energy to the system, and of course it can be recalculated from the Reynolds number. Okay, let be Reynolds number. Or whatever. Yes, yes, of course.
So it's tricky,
yes. So I would prefer the input or the velocity on the larger scale or something like this.
Okay.
I would expect that it goes up to the maximum. This is sort of from the physical picture you gave, that's fine. But why does it have to go down?
You increase sigma, but you don't increase P.
Yes, of course. The problem is that, let us think about the viscous length of the solvent. It increases with increasing Reynolds number. And therefore, starting from a point, suppose that we increase Reynolds number. When optimal value of P reaches P maximum, then the polymer contribution will not increase. But this usual viscous contribution, of course, will continue to increase, obviously. And therefore, at large enough Reynolds number, we can again disregard this term in comparison with the usual viscosity. This is the reason. Very simple.
Where is this drag reduction in your...
This is the region where drag, the essence of drag reduction should be observed.
Yeah.
But this is the...
Increase
this is conduction of point. Yes, direct reduction, of course. Yes, but okay. So let me introduce the equilibrium value of the stress tensor P naught again. And let me rewrite this equation in terms of the difference P prime, which is P minus P naught. And then, if to do this, we see that there is an input, a source for the P prime in this equation, which is exactly this term. And I will be interested in the correlation function of this source also. And really, we can see that this source has a correlation length of the order of the viscous length, since it is associated with sigma, which is the strain tensor. Okay, and introducing this source is analogous to one which was done by Schreiman and Sidje for the problem of stratified passive scalar. And exactly if we subtract the equilibrium linear profile from the passive scalar, then we will find that there appear an effective driving force for this passive scalar, which is proportional to this linear profile. And exactly the same here. Okay. Now, let me write, and I will omit P prime and consider P itself, since I will be interested in the correlation functions for larger deviations, and in this case P prime and P practically coincide. And now I can write really an explicit solution of this equation, which is something like this. W satisfies the equation T prime is equal to sigma T is equal to unity. And this matrix is now other than actually it can be written like the t exponent, chronologically ordered exponent of dt over sigma, something like this. And this is a formal solution of this equation, no more. But it is much more convenient. Yes, and x here is Lagrangian trajectory, which terminates at time t at the point x is equal to r. So it is more or less, the physical meaning of this expression is more or less obvious. P is an integral of the source from minus infinity to a given time t, with a corresponding weight, and really it can be done along the Lagrangian trajectory. How much time have I?
About 2 minutes.
Aha, 2 minutes.
You don't include exponential in the definition of W, for instance?
Hmm?
You don't
want to know
the exponential term
in
the definition of W?
No. No, no. By definition. Yes, and so in this case I should write it separately. Okay, so after that I can think about correlation functions of P, and since I have only 2 minutes, I will formulate only results. The results are the following. If to plot, for example, the P correlation function of P as a function of R, then the situation is the following one. If alpha is larger than 4, that means that... Yes, it's a equal time correlation function. If alpha is larger than 4, therefore, if the second moment exists, then this correlation function looks like this. A constant, which is exactly this second moment, and a correction, which is r to the minus eta. And this eta is actually proportional to the alpha minus 4. Therefore, this this exponent tends to zero exactly at the point when this second moment starts to diverge. And after that, the situation will be the following one.
Are we still dissipation range R?
Yes. In principle, yes. Of course, there is a narrow dissipation range, and it can be estimated. Actually, I have no time. I can write an estimation for this. Okay, and now suppose that alpha is smaller than 4, and in this case the second moment doesn't exist, and after that we will find again r to the eta power, but eta here is negative, and again in the vicinity of the critical value of alpha it changes sign, and in principle it is possible to write explicitly the coefficient here. So this is the this is the behavior of correlation functions of eta in the vicinity of alpha, and so we see that actually not only PDF but also correlation functions has power behavior in terms of separation. Okay, so I will finish at this point, and actually I intended to say also some words about the so-called elastic turbulence, which is absolutely other situation, but okay, let us postpone it to other occasion. Thank you. Okay.
There's a picture you had with the viscosity increasing, the effective viscosity increasing and then decreasing. The decreasing part is of course also connected to the fact that you took a polymer with only a single time scale. If you were to account for the whole distribution of time scales that come within the polymer and the stretching, wouldn't you expect sort of for every degree of freedom to get extra of one of these curves, so that if you take the full range of frequencies that are in the polymer, say about whatever, then you could actually accumulate all of them, you might actually stay up there instead of going down.
In principle, yes. I agree that actually I have taken into account only one degree of freedom, and in principle other degrees of freedom could contribute to the effective viscosity in the Raj stretching, but I'm not sure that of course they could somehow modify a behavior at increasing the effective viscosity, but I don't think that they could produce a plateau.
Well, I mean, you already stretch your molecule for the whole length. I mean,
yes.
And then you continue increasing stretching.
No. Grisha. No, Grisha. Could I explain? The problem is that.
Before, of course, they can make it.
No. The problem is that in principle it is possible to excite a lot of degrees of freedom inside this molecule, which has different characteristic times. And of course, at increasing the input, first the lowest level is excited, but after that, higher levels could be excited, which will produce something like this.
Anyway, before the maximum, yes. After you have a line, I
mean,
then maybe the dependence of these times is more complicated, but at least there is dependence on the time scales, which you did not take into account.
Yes.
And I would like to come back to this question. How do you get shear thinning in this picture, which would mean a smaller effect of viscosity?
Smaller?
I mean, there is this effect called shear thinning, which means that the viscosity seems to be reduced if you apply a shear to these polymer solutions compared to the uncoiled, to the Newtonian solvent. How do you explain shear thinning in this picture?
Yes, that is the problem. The problem is that.
Yes.
The problem is that actually purely shear flow is degenerate in some sense. Since for this flow, Lyapunov exponent is identically equal to zero. And actually, I don't believe that in a turbulent case, these purely shear flows are statistically essential.
And you're not probably here in the conference part of this workshop, but Chekhov also had talked about the same problem.
Yes, I can say about. And actually, he has considered the situation when P back is larger than P maximum. He considers the situation when for large enough energy input, molecules are stretched up to the P maximum immediately without an intermediate scale. And then he considered actually statistics of polymers in this case. And again, I would expect that in this case the back influence of polymers to the flow is negligible. It's another story.
When you have tensors that are specially adjusted by the velocity field, its spectral density moves towards very large k. So it becomes concentrated on very large k in k space. Yes, and
why?
Just happens like that. It goes towards very large k. And again, if you have vector
velocity. Without torsion?
Without
relaxation?
Yeah, without relaxation.
Ah, yes.
Of course, very large k.
Yeah.
So when you compare graph of Qp and graph of velocity field, you cannot just emit gradients, because
they
support some very different
parts of space. In some sense, yes, but in principle, there is no problem to introduce also the diffusive term here, and this diffusive term will produce regularization of any correlation function. It can be examined. If you are interested in details, I can explain. No problem. I don't understand why.
Probably the gradients in the P field
grow
very fast.
Gradients of V.
Much faster with increasing scale?
Yeah. If it goes over the scale towards very large K.
Yes.
If you don't have
okay, let us return to this picture. This is the perturbation function of P. And in principle, you are right that if we will consider exactly this case, then it has a singularity at r equal to 0. But this singularity, of course, is smoothed by diffusivity. In principle, to examine this problem, you should introduce diffusivity, of course.
But everything will progress on this very small scale.
Why? No. Of course, the value of the second moment will not be sensitive to the presence of diffusivity. This is the usual story.
No, I'm not sure. There is something. Actually, what you did before, you compared the term gradient T with the term etala plus V, and that really gave you the onset of back reaction.
Yeah.
And but what you really compared, you compared pi with eta and first derivative of v, which is sigma. Now what Staff claims, if I understand correctly, is the gradient of pi is given by some much smaller scale, that v field and pi field are not of the same.
No. Of course I should compare these two terms on the viscose scale. No, not on the smaller scale.
Why leaves on much smaller scale?
Why leaves on much smaller scale? If you don't have diffusivity, it will go to large case forever. It won't go anywhere.
And to what? It is irrelevant for the back reaction.
No.
To consider back reaction, I should consider viscose scale, definitely.
But it's a gradient of pi.
And to what? I should take this gradient on the viscose scale.
Why? Not where it is largest gradient is on diffusive scale of your pi.
Yes. So, I don't understand. So, to find the boundary for the initial interval, of course I should consider fluctuations with the characteristic vectors which are of the order of the inverse scale. Please construct me a quantity which is sensitive to these gradients on small scale. I don't understand.
Well, okay. Better to continue that privately. Thank you.